All right, we go to our second hour. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I was just DMing during the break with a former professional athlete checking in. And he said, how you doing? Man, it must suck doing a show right now. And I said, it doesn't. It actually does not. In fact, I'm looking right down at my call screen board. Every line is lit. Every single line is lit. No exaggeration. So the truth of the matter is, not only does it not suck doing a show right now, it's getting better and better. It literally is getting better and better. Like, we found our groove. Well, several days back, actually. But it's not. Like, we turned this thing on its head. It's good. It's making us better. It's making us sharper. We're looking for better things to do, better things to talk about, more creative ways to come at it. So the truth is, it's not a crappy time to do it. And let me tell you something else. Clones, you've got a lot to do with this. It's not a crappy time to do a sports talk show because so many of you are at home and participating and normally could not. The phone lines literally are lit in a way that they ordinarily might not be. I mean, unlike a lot of other shows, they're always lit. Don't get this confused. Just because I do not take a lot of telephone calls on this show does not mean that I don't get a lot of telephone calls on this show. I do. I get a ton of calls. Just a lot of them are crap, so I don't put them on the air. What I'm saying is we're getting even more calls right now because so many of you are at home. This is actually not a bad time to do a show. It's, in fact, a good time to do a show. I've got a captive audience. People want content. They want good content. And we're giving it to you. Just giving the people what they want. 1-800-636-8686. And what they also want are good interviews. And I've got some good ones. Jamal Crawford coming up in the middle of this hour. Tristan Wirfs, an NFL draft prospect, coming up next hour. The NFL has been saying over and over again, the draft is not moving. So we're going to keep getting you ready for the draft with draft prospects. Chris Harris Jr. of the Chargers joins me in the last segment of the program. All right, more telephone calls coming up momentarily. I do want to talk about episode 123. Again, not to flex, I'm proud of that number. We have done 123 Jim Rome podcast episodes. You know, I didn't take that thing on, give you four or five or six, and then just kind of flame out. 123. And it dropped yesterday. And at this time, I've been mentioning on the show that it's really important to find people that can tell a story, a good story. Well, this is a storyteller's podcast, to be sure. And that's because UFC champion, former champ, but once a champ, always a champ, and all-around badass Michael Bisping can tell a hell of a story. His or other people's. Now, I've been doing this long enough to know that as soon as I drop those three letters on you, UFC, a number of you check out. Let me jerk you right back into the fold before you're completely gone. Don't do that, especially in this case. Forget for a minute, suspend for a minute that UFC is not your thing. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not trying to talk you into it. It's not for everybody. It is too violent for a lot of people. I get that. But that's not what this is. So if you're one of those people that instantaneously tunes out when you hear those three letters, suspend that thought for a minute. It doesn't have to be your thing. The sport does not need to be your thing. The podcast that I'm talking about, this one, is not about that. I'm not going to break down grapple holds. I'm not going to talk about when to shoot low. I'm not going to say when to go to the body. I didn't bring Mike on for any of that. I brought him on to talk about his life. Because the guy's had an amazing life. Everybody likes to hear those stories. His life, where he grew up poor, he did time, he got his head right, he lost most of the vision in one eye before ultimately losing it altogether. His eye, I mean. The guy goes to parties and he pops his eye out. But he still beat guys with almost no vision at all in his eye. And we got into, why are you still fighting? It's tough enough to get in the cage, even tougher to get in the cage without eyesight in one eye. Like, why would you do that? He answered that question really candidly. But this guy, not yet, This guy is beating guys like Anderson Silva, and he's strapped up against Luke Rockhold just months later, and he can't see out of one of his eyes. I mean, it's one of the more wild stories I've ever heard. So to give you just a sense, let's go back to 2013 when he lost most of his sight in his right eye.
He started with a detached retina in 2013, and then like an idiot, I started fighting again and probably sparring too hard, not wearing headgear, and then the retina detached once again. And then one day I remember I was walking the dog, I started getting a headache. Within 30 minutes, I would say, I was laid face down on the floor, screaming in agony. Absolutely screaming at the top of my voice. I went down to see this doctor and they tested the pressure on my eye. A normal person's pressure is between 9 and 20. The pressure on my eye was around 90 something. They gave me some medication and sent me on my way. I go home, I take some of the medication. It gets to 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm still moaning, I'm still groaning. The medication's wearing off. My wife calls my doctor again. He needs to see a doctor right now. We made the very hard decision of leaving the kids in the house unattended. There's nothing we could do. We had to lock the door. And then when the doctor looked at me, he said, Michael, he said, we're going to put this into your eye to relieve the drain. And I said, well, can I still fight? He said, Michael, that's the least of your problems. So they did the operation, but they messed up the operation. So they had to go back in, undo the surgery that they'd done. Then they had to redo it. From there, the pain was gone, but unfortunately, so was most of the vision.
So what's insane is not that he had to get his right eye drained twice by a laser because the retina was detached. What's insane is he went on to become a champion after that and went through Anderson Silva and Luke Rockhold to do it. And keep in mind, when he beat Rockhold, Luke looked unbeatable at that time. Not only did he look unbeatable, but speaking of that championship, I asked him what it felt like to become the first British title holder in the UFC, and not only did he give me the answer, he gave me an amazing backstory as well.
It's hard to find the words, what that meant to me, because I'd worked so hard for so long, and I worked my way up to being the number one contender, and then I lost those fights, and then I worked my way up to being number one contender, and I'd lose the number one contender fight again. Now, I was in Toronto. I was filming a movie with Vin Diesel, Triple X, Return of Xander Cage. And Ariel Helwani texted me one day. He said, Chris Weidman is out of his title fight with Luke Rockhold. This may be a chance for you to get a shot. Now, the fight was 2 weeks away. Hadn't been to a gym in 3 months. But still, I thought, screw it. You know, I'll throw my name in the hat. And I thought, I probably won't get the title fight. But at least I'll get some good grace from the company. And maybe I'll get the title fight next time, you know. So I went to my buddy's house that night, had a few beers, watched a basketball game. Nothing crazy, but still definitely overindulged. And then the next morning on SportsCenter, they announced that I was fighting for the middleweight world title in 2 weeks. So I stepped on the scale. I was weighing like 215 pounds. I had 2 weeks to train for a world title fight and weigh in at 185 pounds. Made it all happen. All the pieces fell into place and I got the knockout in the first round. So yes, it was amazing. You know, it was a lifetime's worth of hard work that went into that.
So you see what I'm saying? If normally you tune out when you hear the three letters UFC, this is not something you should do. Not what you normally do. This is why this is so good. This is why this particular podcast is so great. You don't need to like the UFC or understand it even to like a story about a guy pounding beers, waking up hungover, and seeing on SportsCenter that he had a title fight in 2 weeks and had to get in shape for that. The opportunity of a lifetime. And then to knock out the dude in the first round, a guy who seemed unbeatable at that time. It's incredible. And so is the fact that Bisping nearly lost his other eye in his final fight of his career.
I was at home and Anderson Silva was supposed to fight Kelvin Gastelum in China. And Anderson Silva failed the steroid test and they needed somebody to fill in. Now, I knew I was retired pretty much, but I thought, screw it. Why not? What's one more for the road? And then, you know, get another payday as well. Let's be frank. So I volunteered on a few days' notice. All I'd done was sit on my couch and have a few beers and enjoy life with my family and eating and drinking because I've been dieting like crazy for the last 2 months. Certainly wasn't anywhere near a gym. So I took the fight, flew off to China. The fight didn't go my way, funnily enough, you know, with pretty much one eye and not training for it, having just lost the fight. So I lost that fight. Afterwards, I'm in a nightclub. We had an after party arranged. And I'm in a nightclub. And every time I look to my left, I see a flash of light. And every time I look to the left, I see a flash of light. Now, because of my history with the eye, I knew that that is potential detached retina in my good eye. And I started freaking out, and I was very, very worried, because I thought, even if they can repair the detached retina in my good eye, I'm going to go blind. And I'm in a nightclub here, and I'm starting to get emotional, and I'm like, my eyes are tearing up, and I'm like, I got to get out of here. People are going to think I'm crying because I lost a fight. I'm not crying because I've lost a fight. I'm crying because I think I'm going to go blind. As soon as I land in LA, I text my eye doctor. I say, listen, I think I've got a detached retina. Needless to say, I never fought again. And then, yeah, that was that. That was the end of my fight career.
This guy, man, Bisping is amazing. He said, I thought I'd do one more for the road, yet like a beer. But no, a fight. He said, I hadn't been training. And because I've been dieting so long to stay in shape, I've been eating and drinking. And then I went out there for the payday one more time. He goes, strangely enough, I lost. Crazy, right? I'm blind in one eye and I'm out of shape. This guy's incredible. Now, I mentioned off the top, this guy could tell a story, whether it's his own. And there's a lot more where that came from. It's not like I just played you the only good stories from that podcast. There's a lot more where that came from. But I said off the very top, this guy can tell a story now, either his or somebody else's. Now turn your radio or your TV way the hell up. I want you to get a load of this Jorge Masvidal tale. Now you know I love Masvidal, and I love him way more after hearing this story. I want you to listen to the story that Bisping is about to spit about Jorge, because it's unlike anything I've ever heard.
When I was in China, when me and Jorge, when we settled it, so to speak, we were in Uruguay. We ended up having a few drinks, and then the next day, we get a taxi to the airport together. So we went from one hand hating each other to the next minute, we're like best buds in the back of an Uber going to the airport. And we're talking about China, and he tells me this story. He said, I went into the bathroom and had this gold chain on. And he said, and two guys walked in, and one of them kind of like flicked my gold chain. And he said, I don't know if they're going to rob me or what. He said, so bang, I punched this one guy, I knocked him out. Then bang, I punched the other guy and I knocked him out. And he says, and then a third guy comes walking into the bathroom, and he says, I don't know if he was with them or not, but I couldn't take that chance, so bang, and I knocked him out as well. And I'm sitting there in the back of this Uber thinking, you're a psycho, but you're awesome. I love it.
If Michael Bisping thinks you're a psycho, what an incredible story. And you have to listen to the podcast to get the backstory. Bisping and Masvidal were in a bad, bad place. Like, they were going to go. And I don't mean for pay either. Like, in the street. Like, wherever they could get it on. The two of these guys hated each other. And Bisping lays out how he got on the wrong side of Masvidal. And if you know anything about Jorge, Jorge will go. And I don't mean in a UFC, MMA. These are different kind of guys. Will go. I mean, of all these guys that are different guys, take Jorge Masvidal and put him off to the side. He's a really different guy. Like, he will go. You've heard him on this show. He used to street fight for Big Macs and whatever action his guys could get going. Jorge Masvidal is no joke. And so if he's in a nightclub and two guys roll up on him, and obviously they must have had no idea who he was. You imagine rolling up on Jorge Masvidal and flicking his gold chain. What's dumber than that? Bang, he knocked the first guy out. Bang, he knocked the second guy out. And then a third guy walks in and he has no idea whether or not he's with the first two guys, but he wants to leave nothing to chance, so he cold cocks him too. In a bathroom. In a Chinese nightclub. Absolutely incredible. Like I said, Bisping can tell a story about himself or somebody else. And there's also that great story about how the two of them are friends now. I mean, imagine, how would you like to be the fourth guy? Imagine walking into the John after that. Three dudes napping it out on the tile, looking like they're about to get outlined in chalk because two of them messed with Masvidal, and the third one was a wild card who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and Jorge was going to leave nothing to chance. I mean, that's some Bourne stuff right there, right? Like Bourne. Bourne trying to get away from the asset. Bourne in a bathroom, and a few guys walk in. Bam, bam, bam. Three guys were asleep. Except that was not a Bourne movie. That was Jorge Masvidal. It's incredible. UFC, baby. It's unreal. It's an incredible conversation. The UFC podcast that Michael Bisping just did with us. It is live. Don't listen to it right now because I've got a lot of show for you still. But listen to it after the program. Check it out. iTunes, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, JimRome.com, or in the usual spot, pinned to the top of my Twitter feed. Man, that's how you show up. And he's a great analyst. In fact, there's a number of former fighters that are working with UFC right now and elsewhere that are really, really good analysts, like Tony Romo-esque good. And he's one of them. And I did ask him, Michael, you were blind in one eye. What the hell were you doing fighting? How could you fight without being able to see out of one eye? I would think that'd be pretty important for a fighter. And he answered it really honestly. Really honestly. So if you heard that, I want your reaction. Well, you just heard it in part. We're coming right back. I've got Jamal Crawford coming up at 40 past. Stay tuned. Years of research, hundreds of tests, thousands of iterations, and the result, the latest and dreamiest in sleep innovation. Introducing the new mattresses from Casper. Casper has done it yet again with all new mattresses. Are you waking up with back pain? Then we have the Zone Support. Casper's unique ergonomic system designed to keep your spine aligned when you sleep. There's something brand new called AirScape. Engineered foam layers with perforations that help regulate your sleep temperature. So from bedding, bed frames, and even now a dog bed, Casper has everything to build the dream bedroom. For every kind of sleeper, experience the very best night of sleep every single night like I do with a new mattress from Casper. And as always, free shipping and free returns. Go to Casper.com and use the code Rome. Get $100 off your mattress order. Casper.com. Use the code Rome. $100 off your mattress order. Casper.com. Code name ROME. Terms and conditions do apply. See Casper.com/terms.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Now you're done. He's gone. Hey, Alvin, I got a question for you. Was that an us thing or a Spencer thing? Hit me up. You think Spencer dropped? I don't want to blame Ritt for everything. 1-800-636-8686. So like when I say I'm going to the phones, you got to be on the phone. Open phones don't work if you're on hold and I go to you and you're not there. Let's go to Vallejo. Mike. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Jim, I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm great, Mike. Really good. What's up?
So I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you to you and the XR4TI for, you know, bringing us a sense of normalcy. I grew up in L.A. I live in Vallejo now, but I grew up in L.A. So there's four legendary voices that I associate with L.A. Chick Hearn, Vin Scully, Stu Nahan, and yourself. I mean, growing up, those were the four voices I listened to either on the radio or on TV. So thank you for keeping that going all these years. And second of all, I was actually at that Bisbee fight against Rockhold. I got to meet him a couple of times. I'm really close with Dana White. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see that I'm not lying. But, man, Bisbee is just another type of guy. I mean, yeah, Masvidal is on another level. But Bisbee, he brings out the beast in the cage. But when you get to meet him on the side, I've had pizza with that man sitting backstage after, you know, he was pulling analyst duty. I mean... the stuff that he talks about is just amazing. The knowledge of the fight game is on another level. So for you to interview him, I'm looking forward to that podcast, man. I really, you know, appreciate all the UFC stuff that you do. I know a lot of people don't listen to it, but when other people turn it down, I turn it up.
My man, Mike, nice job. I appreciate you. Great to have you, Mike. He knows what he's talking about. You know, he mentioned that, like, people don't get Bisping or they don't know Bisping, that he sat backstage with him and had pizza with him. We got into that whole thing. Like, Bisping, he was a wild man. Like, he played the role of the heel. And he understood that people did not like him, and he kind of reveled in that. He got fuel from that. He played that role. He knows that he inflamed certain emotions. But the funny thing about Bisping is, so he comes on and he grinds and he grinds and he grinds. It takes him 10 years to get a shot at the middleweight championship of the world. And then he wins it. He's fighting with one eye. He wins it with one eye. And then he retires. He becomes an extremely popular analyst. He writes an amazing book. And now it's all love. And people are starting to see the other side of the guy. And I said, what's that like? You know, it was so, there was so much hate for so long. And now literally, when you go into your mentions, everybody is positive. Everybody's happy to see you. And we got into that. Mike said that he grew up in Los Angeles and that there were those voices. It was Chick Hearn. It was Vin Scully. He put Stu Nahan in that group, too. That was interesting. Yeah, I grew up in L.A., too. And when I think about my time in L.A. as a kid and I was coming up, I get that a lot, too. Like, who were your mentors? Who were the icons? Who were the guys that you want to be like? And the truth of the matter is, I was never a play-by-play guy. I never wanted to be a play-by-play guy. And when I came up, there really wasn't much of a format. There was almost no sports talk at all. When I was growing up, there were no sports talk stations, really. There were only a few sports talk shows. So I didn't really have that guy. But being an L.A. sports fan, of course, I grew up on Chick Hearn and Vin Scully. And to a certain extent, Dick Emberg. Dick Emberg was SoCal-based. But the guys that were larger than life were Vin Scully, of course, and Chick Hearn. In fact, you know, I've told that story before about what's it like when you meet one of your idols? What's it like when you meet a hero? It can go really, really well, or it can be a nightmare. When I was at UC Santa Barbara, and I knew that I wanted to be in the business somehow, some way, Chick Hearn came through town. And they had something called the Athletic Roundtable, and they'd have speakers. And you have to understand, man, Chick Hearn was larger than life and in his prime, and he came to speak at the Athletic Roundtable. And I was just this scrub reporter on campus at UC Santa Barbara. And instead of dragging a little tape recorder out, I had this crazy boombox that was my stereo in my dorm room with detachable speakers. And for whatever reason, rather than go to the radio station, I think I wanted the best sound quality. I had this like Techniques boombox that I'd spent every dollar I'd ever earned in my entire life on. And I dragged this thing all the way from the dorm into downtown Santa Barbara to show up this lunch. Man, I'm dumping sweat. I'm sweating profusely, just like hoping to get a station ID from Chick Hearn. And he does this whole thing. He does his speech at lunch. And everybody listens, and everybody's standing at the end, and I'm waiting my turn. And he looks over at me. He's like, hey, young fella, do you want an interview? I said, yes, I would like an interview. Still sweating profusely with this 100-pound tape deck that I dragged from the dorms all the way downtown Santa Barbara. This guy did like a 15-minute interview. Couldn't have been cooler. Couldn't have been classier. Couldn't have been more dignified. It was so great. So like that was an opportunity to meet a hero that went really, really well. Dick Emberg would show up on occasion when I played Little League Baseball at Sherman Oaks Little League because his son played in the same league. And we'd all look over like, damn. I understand the world was very different, right? No internet, no 500 stations. I mean, it was just network TV. So if somebody like Vin Scully or Dick Emberg showed up at a baseball game, a Little League Baseball game, it was like Robert De Niro showed up. And he just be off to the side, Dick Emberg, and I'd be like, damn, that's Dick Emberg. Like, as an example, I would show up to all my kids' baseball games. Nobody looked at me like that. Nobody looked at me the way I was looking at Dick Emberg. I don't know that anybody even knew who I was, except for Greg Berhalter. He did, because we'd sit in the stands together. But when I would go to my kids' travel ball games or Little League games, I didn't get that kind of reaction. But Dick Emberg was there. That was the one thing about growing up in the San Fernando Valley, 818 for life. There were lots of athletes and lots of broadcasters that lived in that area. How do you think I found my man, the Penguin, driving around? He was in the 818. Garv was in the 818. Steve Yeager was in the 818. The Penguin was in the 818. I don't think Vinny was in the 818. Appreciate that flashback, what it was like to grow up in Los Angeles. He mentioned Stu Nahan was his guy. Fred Rogan ultimately came on and took over for Stu Nahan as a young guy. He was dominating the L.A. market. Vic the Brick was on L.A. TV. lot of good times. All right, we'll take a short timeout. When we come back, Jamal Crawford is going to join us. If you're on hold, stay there. Like I said, this show feels to me right now about as good as it ever has, honestly. Except back in the early 90s when I could do whatever the hell I wanted and it didn't matter. Other than that time, good content, good shows, good energy, a good podcast, and more. Plus, Jamal Crawford joins me next. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. Do not go anywhere.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
The interview portion of the program is going to get underway momentarily. Quick look ahead to next hour, LA Chargers Corner. Chris Harris Jr., he's going to close the show. We'll start hour number three by talking to an NFL draft prospect, a tackle from Iowa, Tristan Wirfs. Jamal Crawford is going to join me momentarily. The other things I want to get to today, remember I talked earlier in the week about how Phil Mickelson was making noise about maybe bringing back the match? Like, the match one was already one of the most disappointing things ever. The only thing more disappointing would be to try to reboot that thing and bring it back. Bring back something that nobody wants. Yeah, apparently they are. Apparently they're going to bring it back and then add to it a couple of people who are just going to make it so much worse. So you're going to take a bad idea and make it much, much worse. I did mention, and some of you have brought up, hey, Rome, why are you not making good on what you said at the top of the program? That part about how instead of giving us what we need, you're finally going to give us what we want. I've not forgotten. I've just got more important things to do, but I've not forgotten. I never forget what I say. I suggested that I might give you what you want as opposed to what you need. I said I might, but I've not forgotten about that. I'm trying to forget about that, but I understand that it's a trying time and a troubling time and a confusing time, and you kind of don't want me riding you incessantly. It's kind of like what drove Tom Brady out of New England, right? Belichick being on the guy over and over and over again. Belichick not giving this guy any kind of love. Belichick not patting him on the back. I mean, I'm just speculating. I'm not there. But I'd imagine if I were Tom Brady and I were the GOAT and I'd won 6 rings, I probably would get sick of this guy being on my ass all the time. As promised, right on time, we are joined by somebody who has spent 19 years in the NBA, a 3-time Sixth Man of the Year Award winner, 2018 NBA Teammate of the Year Award winner, the only player in NBA history with 50-point games for 4 different teams. He is a friend of the program. He is Jamal Crawford. Jamal, before we talk about basketball and life, I want to welcome you back, and I want to ask you, how are you and your family doing right now, Jamal?
We're doing well. To make do, obviously, with so much going on, it's crazy times, but we're bunkered down and getting online school going during the day and getting activities and stuff and then trying to help, our community here. So it's been interesting. It's been something that's crazy, but we're trying to do our part for, ourselves and for people in our community and abroad.
I think that's great. Jamal Crawford joining us. I'll talk basketball in 1 minute, but in terms of doing your part for the community, you're doing just that. You have partnered with World Vision USA to provide hundreds of family emergency kits. You've worked with Club Insider to provide child care assistance for 3 weeks, and you've collaborated with Food Lifeline to provide 150,000 meals for kids and seniors. So what's it meant to you to be able to take action like this and to give back?
It's meant everything, to be able to be in a position to do that. I think that's our responsibility, and it's the community I care about and care about people in general. You may not get a chance to actually meet that person in person, but if you know you're helping people out there who really need it, I think that's fulfilling as well. And there's so many kids, and everybody's affected by it. They really are. And for us, I think we all have to do our part and just help and knowing that we're buying time and we may have to help again, but that's what our duty is, so we'll continue to do that as long as continues.
We're talking to Jamal Crawford. One more thought about that, because you've always made the point that you love basketball, but basketball does not define you. So how important is that statement to you right now?
Boy, this is what it is. It really is. Like, being a world-class athlete is one thing, and that's one dream. Being able to help people is much more significant, and it pulls at your heartstrings. It means so much more to you.
know, and I think that's the real gift of having this platform, trying to take full advantage by using it the right way.
We're talking to Jamal Crawford. Let's talk some basketball. It's been nearly a year since you dropped 51 for Phoenix in the season finale against Dallas. You were 18 for 30 in that game, which is incredibly efficient. When you think back on that game, what sticks out to you the most?
It was Dirk's last home game, and the energy in the city, it's light from shoot-around, you could feel it. Right from the morning, the whole city was alive. Everybody was wearing Dirk jerseys, and being a part of that was like a tremendous honor. And then playing well in that game, I'll never forget that at all. And it's amazing to know that we were there for a historic moment, and then being able to have a small piece in that and make some history of my own was pretty cool as well.
Talking to Jamal Crawford, in terms of history, you and I have talked basketball history so many times over the years. So what's it mean to you to know that that game, you made history, you broke MJ's record as the oldest player in league history with a 50-point game, and you became the first player to have 50-point games with four teams. What do those distinctions mean to you?
It was just unbelievable. Michael Jordan is my favorite player ever and the best player ever to me. So to be mentioned in any form with him is like, it's just unreal. And then the last thing was having the most points ever off the bench in history. I didn't even think it was possible to score that many off the bench. I didn't think it was enough time for anybody to do it. So, you know, to break those kind of records was just unbelievable. And the only thing that could have topped it off was a win. But obviously, like I said, it was Dirk tonight. And him, you know, you don't feel like you lost because you were part of his history as well.
Jamal, what you think about that matters to me a lot. I mean, you've played 19 years in the NBA. You've had an amazing career, and you're a historian of the game, and you study the game and have for so long. When you say Mike's the best ever, what separates him from the others in your mind?
Just everything, longevity. The thing about Mike that's different for me growing up was I had a lot of other favorite players, and there's a lot of great players now. But Mike was the one person that kind of allowed you to dream. You know what I mean? And he was the guy for me and so many people. I think he's so good that, you know, when people are great in other sports, they say this person is the Michael Jordan of this. You know, and he's never lost in the finals. He's the bigger the moment, the better he was. He's never seen a game seven, and we could argue that he's probably the most clutch player ever. So we may not have ever seen his true best performance because he never had to go to game seven. You know what I mean? So it's just so many different things of doing what he did. He always rose to the occasion. He never let you down.
Jamal Crawford, my guest. You know, one thing for you to talk about Mike or LeBron or Kobe, but it's so much deeper than that, because one of my favorite conversations in my job is talking to you about basketball and basketball history, in the sense that you tweeted the other day, for example, Steve Smith, Jalen Rose, Danny Manning, Joe Johnson, Ed O'Bannon, Harold Miner highlights today. Like, you're always learning, you're always studying, you're always looking to improve. What did you take away from watching those guys?
Well, with those guys, they all did something different. You know, watching Jalen, watching Steve Smith, watching how they could play multiple positions back when, you know, that wasn't really known. It was more known you were a point guard, you were a shooting guard, you were this position. And so for me, having this platform, I always want to big up those other guys that NBA fans may not think about initially. You know, and obviously you think of the Jordans, the Kobes, the LeBrons, but there were other great players as well. So every day while this is going on, I'm always going to tweet out four or five different guys. Some you may know, some you may not have heard in a while, just so people go back and look like, oh, that guy was really good. You know, there's a lot of great players who helped build this whole thing.
Talking to Jamal Crawford. I love that. Now, when you were starting to become a legend, not just in Seattle, but in the entire state, I want to make this very clear. You were doing so before there was social media. This is when the Sonics were still there, and you're getting right up there with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp in terms of fame in that state. What was that time like for you?
It was just unbelievable to be a 17-year-old kid and be one of the most popular athletes in the whole state at any level. You know, those guys, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, they really took a liking to me and start coming to my games. You know, it was like a must-see event. And I'm not saying that to brag, but if you ask anybody in that time period, that's kind of what it was. I think behind Sean and Gary and maybe Detlef, I was probably the next most popular player in the state as far as basketball goes. And I was just a high school kid. You know, so for me, before social media, it was just like a dream come true. And it just felt like I was performing every single game, which is really cool.
I mean, it's amazing. I can remember also before social media, when kids, like in Southern California, in Los Angeles, and in around the areas, when those kids became that big, it was so awesome. It was like an event when they ran. So, like, what was it like when Payton and Kemp and Doug Christie were giving you advice when you were in high school?
Well, it made it more believable to me, because at that age, you feel like, okay, I'm having some success against kids, you know, and against people on the playgrounds. But when the pros, top-level pros, all-world pros said, hey, you can do this, you can make it, then that changed my life, because at that point, I didn't want anything from them but to tell me how to get there, how to sustain this, what do I need to do. And those guys at that level saying you can do it, it gives you a whole another fuel, and it changed my whole life.
We're talking to Jamal Crawford. Also, I think as people know, you were going to play at Fresno State, but it's not just about going to play at Fresno State. Legend has it Jerry Tarkanian came up from Fresno to recruit you. That says a ton, right, Jamal? Because Tark did not go on the road to recruit very much. What was it like being recruited by Tark?
It was unbelievable. I've seen him since the UNLV days, obviously, and the Running Rebels, and him. Tark, he was just unbelievable. He's such a legend, such a class act. And he told me that, actually. He said, I've only been on two visits where I had to leave, and you're one of my other two. So that tells you what I think about you. And actually, Tim Gergridge had told him about me in the initial part of everything just by seeing me and hearing about me in Seattle. So shout out to Tim Gergridge.
Gerg, a legend in his own right. We're talking to Jamal Crawford. You know, you mentioned that you just wanted to learn. Like, you told Chris Haynes recently that the pros at those pro-ams that you attended, you know, they were telling you, you can do it, you can make it. And your response was, hey, listen, I don't want your phone number. I just want to know what gym you're going to be at. Teach me how to fish. What did you mean by that, and where did that attitude come from?
Well, I just felt like, you know, getting your phone number or giving me a pair of shoes, that wasn't going to do it for me. I had a long-term vision, and I just wanted to know day by day what I needed to do. So if they told me Doug Christie was going to work out with me at 7 o'clock, I would be there at 6 o'clock waiting for him, whether I had to catch the bus or however I had to get there. And he knew I was serious. So he was like, here, here's somebody I can really mentor. And he gets it. You know, he sees beyond what's in front of him right now. And I think they just really took a liking to me, and I really want to learn how to do this and be in this position. And it changed my life. And in return, I'm doing it for the next generation here up here as well.
You know, it sounds like, Jamal, I had a conversation with Udonis Haslam on the show yesterday, and he said almost verbatim the exact same thing that you just said. And he's played an extremely high level, at a high level for so long. We talked about the role that work ethic plays in that. How much of what you've done on the floor is about your innate ability, and then how much of that is about the work ethic and taking care of your body and mind?
Oh, that's everything. Yeah, it really is. And just love, pure love. When you truly love something, nobody has to tell you, hey, let's go do this. Or, you know, you find yourself doing it, and you always want to do it. You become obsessive about it. And when you're obsessive about it, you want to be the best you can be at it. And that's where the work ethic and the love and the passion comes from. And for me, I've always used that, and I've always leaned on that. I have a T-shirt that says Ball's Life, and my wife said that's an understatement for you. You know, like you said, to this day, 40 years old, been in the NBA almost 20 years, and still watching guys every single day trying to learn, trying to get better and paying it forward.
Jamal Crawford joining us and paying it forward. You told Chris Haynes also that you didn't really learn how to be a pro until you were around guys like Charles Oakley, Kendall Gill, and Greg Anthony. What did you learn from them about being a pro, and what's the wisdom that you picked up from them?
One of the things I learned was just how to dress, you know, how to carry yourself, how to present yourself. Being on time is not being on time. You have to be here, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours early. You have to be the last one to leave. All those different things. B.J. Armstrong, Pete Myers, guys who worked for the Bulls at that time, were veterans for me as well, even though I didn't play for them. Those were guys who had been in the league, had success in the league, and told me about how it is to be a pro, how you carry yourself, and how everybody, you have to live like everybody's watching you all the time when there's nobody around. Because there's a kid somewhere watching you like, hey, you know, Jamal has his jersey untucked or his shoes aren't tied. And you just have to carry yourself like a pro. So those guys really taught me a lot, taught me how to eat. I would eat McDonald's all the time then, and just different things of that nature.
Awesome. When I look at those three guys, Jamal, I mean, they're all different. They're all really different, but the one common thread, too, man, they're tough. There is a toughness about those three, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's what I said when I was growing up watching the NBA. It was the men's league. You know, you had Michael Jordan doing all these incredible things at 35. You know, you had Gary Payton, these guys playing till almost 40 years old because it was a men's league, and they kind of went through the rigors of college and being coached and kind of come in as men, you know, and they understood that. You know, I think it helped me in the long run as well.
And we know Charles Oakley, and when it comes to toughness, nobody wants to mess with Oak. We know this. I don't even like talking about nobody wanting to mess with Oak because I don't want to get back to Oak that I was messing with Oak when he's the last guy I'd ever mess with, and I love him. But I've told the story, Jamal. When I went to UC Santa Barbara, we were in the same conference, the Big West, as UNLV, so they'd roll in to play the Gauchos where I went to school. Greg Anthony had that shattered jaw. It was wired shut for like an entire month. I think he ate through a straw for a month, and he came to play us. He hit the deck so hard early in one game. I mean, he bounced his face off the deck. I'm like, this kid's dead. He popped right up. I'd never seen anything like it. He was so tough, Anthony. I mean, so, yeah, so tough.
So tough. And that speaks that era. Look at those Knicks teams. Those guys played together back then. You know, and they were just tough, tough-minded. And it made you tougher. And not just always physically, but mentally as well.
That's the final thought. You've been training all season, making sure you're ready for when a team calls you. How are you going about getting your work in right now?
Well, now, you know, we can't play anymore, so I'm doing a lot of boxing stuff. I have a boxing bag actually at my house, so I'm doing that. I'm doing swimming. We have a pool, so I'm able to utilize that. Running some hills with the weight vest on, doing some yoga. And it's a lot of core. You know, I'm still outside shooting. We have a hoop in the driveway, so I'm outside shooting right now. But up until that point when we were able to actually work out, I was setting up games, private games, and playing it like 125, you know, and doing it like a real full game. So I'm in shape and ready to go when the time comes.
It's a lifestyle for you, Jamal. I know this. 19 years in the NBA, three-time Sixth Man of the Year Award winner, 2018 NBA Teammate of the Year Award winner, the only player in NBA history with 50-point games for four different teams. Jamal, great to get caught up with you. I appreciate it very much, and I've always appreciated you.
You as well, Jim. Thank you so much for having me.
So good to talk to you, Jamal. Thank you. Thank you for doing it. Such a class act. When we come back, hour number three, Tristan Wirfs joins us at the top. He's an NFL draft prospect. Chris Harris Jr. also coming up next hour. Stay tuned. 2 hours down, third hour coming up next.